Okay, the Joint Senate and Higher Education, Joint Senate and House Higher Education Committee for the University of Minnesota Region Recommendations will come to order on Tuesday, February 23rd. So welcome everybody, and I look forward to a brief meeting and getting this over with in a hurry. It's my sense of humor, everybody. Anyway, the way we're going to do this is we're going to start out by a review and an adoption of the Joint Committee procedures. And what I'll do is I'll have Senate Counsel read the procedures aloud for the committee, and then we'll do a formal adoption of them. If anybody has any questions before voting, just go ahead and ask. And I'll call on Senate Counsel now, Ms. White, to go ahead and read the procedures that we're going to run the committee by tonight.
Good evening, Senator and members of the committee. My name is Joan White, and I'm with the Office of Senate Counsel. You were sent out the Joint Committee meeting procedures, which I will be reading. And it, like Senator said, if you have any questions, just let me know. Number one, the Senate Chair will convene the proceedings pursuant to temporary Senate Rule 12.1B and the House of Representatives Rule 10.1, and the gavel will be passed after voting on each vacant seat. Roll call votes will be taken by the respective legislative assistant for each body. After a body has completed its portion of the roll call vote, the body's legislative assistant will announce the vote tally for that body. When the roll call vote is complete, the chair will announce the final vote totals. Consideration of candidates will proceed in numerical order of each congressional district-based seat, starting with the first district, followed by the fourth, sixth, and seventh. A candidate other than those recommended by RCAC may be nominated if the candidate receives the support of two senators and three representatives on the joint committee as required under Minnesota statutes and the joint rules. A show of hands using the Zoom raise hand feature will be called to determine whether an additional candidate has the support required to be included as a nominee. The chair will recite the names of all committee members supporting the nomination. Nominations will be taken prior to the presentations by RCAC candidates. Each nominated candidate shall be allowed to make a two-minute presentation before the committee. Presentations shall be made in alphabetical order by last name. Once all the candidates for a seat have completed their presentations, nominees will be called to the table together to answer questions from members of the joint committee. Timing for the question and answer period is 15 minutes for each congressional district-based seat. After the allotted time has expired, the Joint Committee may allot an additional 5 minutes by a majority vote of the full committee one time for each set of nominees. A candidate will be recommended to the Joint Convention upon receiving a majority votes from the House, from the Senate, which is 4 votes, and the House, which is 10 votes. Voting for a seat shall begin immediately after the conclusion of the question and answer period for that seat. If there are more than two nominees for a seat and none receives the votes necessary to be recommended to the Joint Convention, any nominee receiving 0 votes and the candidate receiving votes but with the lowest vote total shall be eliminated. In the event that this process leaves only one candidate remaining, then only the nominee or nominees with the lowest vote total will be eliminated. If this again would result in only one candidate remaining, then no candidates are eliminated. If only two candidate nominees remain for a seat and neither receives the votes necessary for recommendation to the joint convention after one round of voting, with only those two nominees on the ballot, then the co-chairs of the joint committee may call the remaining nominees forward for one additional 5-minute question and answer period. If after at least 2 rounds of voting, no candidate has been eliminated and no candidate has received the necessary votes to be recommended to the joint convention, the chair may declare an impasse, add the remaining candidates to a slate, and vote viva voce on the slate. If the slate of candidates receives the votes necessary for recommendation, the candidates on the slate are recommended to the joint convention. Proxy voting is prohibited. The joint committee shall not meet past midnight.
So I was hoping it wouldn't go past 7. So anyway, Are there any questions of council on the procedures before we adopt the procedures? Okay, and then.
So, Chair, I actually have a question.
Okay, Representative Marion.
Thank you, Senator.
Sorry.
It's okay, Senator Tomasoni. Just a quick question about how you're going to be doing the voting. Will you be calling, will they be doing the chair of the House and then the minority lead like we've been doing in committee, or what is your procedure for actually the order in which you're going to be calling for the votes?
Well, I'm assuming it'll be alphabetical order. I'm instructing my LA to call on me first as the chair. I'm not sure what Representative Bernardi is doing, but I'm assuming it's alphabetical order. Okay, and I think the way to do this will be that when I'm chairing, the Senate will vote first, and then when Representative Bernardi is chairing, that the House will vote first. And we are going to rotate the gavel between each district. So are there any other questions? All right. I suppose at any time, if you don't understand what we're doing, just ask. And we'll figure out exactly how to answer your question. So on the procedures as presented by, we got another one? Sorry. What's his name? Representative Noor.
Thank you so much, Senator Tomasoni. The question that I have for you, there are some members who are struggling to join the meeting because of the way the setup was done for the Zoom. Can we make sure that all the members who are struggling to join the meeting are able to join this meeting?
Who's not getting in?
Senator Tomasoni, there are a few individuals from the House who had some issues logging in because it requires you to type the ID, which is not a format that we have been using in the House Zoom call. So I can check with them if they're able to log in. I don't see them here right now, but at least I can check with my colleague Sean if he can check with the members.
Okay, if they're copying and pasting, that doesn't work. They actually have to type in the number. So,
Senator Tomasoni, you're correct, and that's the way that I was able to join the meeting.
Okay. So, go ahead. I'm getting advice from staff. Huh?
Yeah, I would be happy for anyone who has members who are struggling to join the meeting. Please feel free to have them either email me or shoot me a text here.
Representative Bernardi. You're on mute.
Thank you, Mr. Technological Senator over there. Thank you. I appreciate that. I would just, I know we decided not to do this, but if we find that members are struggling to get on and we're not certain who it is, we could do a roll call just to make sure. But I will leave that to your discretion. Otherwise, our staff could like look to see who's here as well. There's a few options to handle this. Thank you, Senator.
There should be all senators are in. Are all the House members in?
I will leave that to our CLA to determine, our committee legislative assistant to determine that.
You have 19 total, correct?
Yeah, I believe we may be missing Representative Thompson, so I can reach out and try and help him get on.
Representative Bernardi, your hand was still up. Senator Claussen, did you want to say something? Or did you have an answer?
I was going to suggest a roll call, Mr. Chair, but seems like we've got it under control.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty easy to check and see if everybody's online. But just let me know when Representative Thompson gets online and we'll get going. I don't think we have to have everybody to just vote on the procedures. So does anybody object to voting on the procedures? We have more than a quorum. All right. On the procedures as read by council, all those in favor, you should probably unmute yourselves because we're going to do it viva voce and maybe stick up your finger too, or your thumb, I mean. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is adopted. All right. Are we all online now?
I believe Representative Thompson is just able to join and Representative Koznick is just joining.
Okay. All right.
Senator Tomasoni, I believe Representative Koznick is still, he just joined. Okay. We're good.
Okay. We're all good. All right. Try and stay on, everybody. Okay. The second order of business is to a review of the Region Candidate Advisory Council process. Dan Walter, are you on somewhere?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Why don't you go just identify yourself for the record and then go ahead and let us know what the process was.
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Joint Committee. My name is Dan Walter, W-O-L-T-E-R. I live in Lakeville and am chair of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council for this cycle. I will go rather quickly for this because I know you got a lot of work tonight and I'm not the one you're here to hear from. But as you all know, the RCAC, Regent Candidate Advisory Council, was created by the legislature and is established in statute to identify, recruit, and recommend to this committee at least two and no more than four qualified candidates for each of the open seats on the board. The RCAC consists of 24 members, including two students appointed by the House and Senate to serve six-year staggered terms. This was an interesting year because it's the first time, I think, in my nearly 10 years on the RCAC that we have had all 24 members appointed and seated for the process. And I want to just give a shout out to Representative Bernardi, because I know she worked very, very hard to make sure that happened on the House side. And former Senator Paul Anderson, I know, worked pretty diligently on the Senate side as well. That makes our job a lot easier when we have all 24 members of the RC seated and participating in the process. The RCAC is supported by the staff of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, who helps facilitate all of our meetings and the application process, much of which was online this year, which was a change from what we've had potentially in the past. All members of the meeting are open. All RCAC meetings are open to the public and recorded. This year, everything was held by Zoom remotely, just like you're doing today. So we kind of learned learned that by trying. As you know, there are four positions of the Board of Regents coming to term in 2021, one from each of Minnesota's 1st, 4th, 6th, and 7th congressional districts. We held our first organizational meeting in October. A number of subcommittees were created to carry out directives and make recommendations to the RCAC. Their work consisted of reviewing past practices, updating materials, and making a number of recommendations. The RCAC began actively recruiting candidates in October of 2020. Statewide outreach efforts included press releases, letters to the editor, contact with legislators, contact with other organizations, and just recruitment efforts, individual recruitment efforts by our members, and I know by a number of you as well. Throughout the process, the RCAC placed a high priority on diversity and recruiting candidates that would provide the legislature with a robust set of options to improve the diversity of the Board of Regents and to give you the best possible array of options as you begin this process. We did receive a total of 20 applications this year. We met in December for the preliminary screening of candidates to interview. After some extensive discussion and debate, we determined to interview all 20 candidates. One candidate did withdraw prior to interview. So we did interview in open session 19 candidates. I think you're hearing from 18 of them, I think, tonight. I believe one potentially dropped out. But we did that on January 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. And in the case of each candidate, the RCAC members reviewed the candidate application packets, which include some essay questions, some written references. And we conducted a 45-minute interview that had a wide array of questions. On Friday, January 8th, the RCAC voted in the final recommendations process to forward the 12 candidates to the Joint Committee for consideration. Those are the ones you're hearing from this evening. And as I mentioned before, one candidate did withdraw from consideration after he was recommended by the RCAC. So I want to just once again thank the legislative involvement that we had on the RCAC. I know Senator Clausen, Representative Bernardi, Representative Daniels, all are seated on the RCAC and sat through a full week of 20 hours of interviews and 5 hours of rigorous debate. So I appreciate that. I appreciate all the other members. There's a lot of hardworking, conscientious individuals that put a lot of work into this process. So I want to give a shout out to them. And Mr. Chair, that ends my report. I'm happy to stand for questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Mr. Walter. And thank you all who sat through that testimony for all those hours. I appreciate it. Are there any questions of Mr. Walter? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to recognize Chair Walter. He just did an excellent job of leadership and steering us through the process. And Dan, greatly appreciate your work and your commitment to the RCAC over the years, and look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, I don't see any, and you know, if you raise your hand and I don't notice it, unmute yourself and yell at me, okay? Because that might be just a good way to get my attention. And with that, we'll move on to the third order of business on the agenda, which is Congressional District 1 candidate recommendation and the nominations. These candidates were forwarded by the RCAC and are automatically nominated, and the RCAC nominees for this seat are Val Arsvold and Ruth Johnson. Members wishing to nominate additional candidates may do so at this time. Nominations must receive the support of 2 senators and 3 representatives to be accepted, and the raise hand feature will be used for this. So if there are any other nominations for Congressional District 1, now is the time to make them. Representative I just see her. I see no hands up. So with that, we will go on to candidate presentation. The candidates will have 2 minutes each and will be asked to stop if they run over the 2-minute time limit. And from there, we'll go to interview the candidates with a 15-minute time frame, and members can ask specific questions of any of the candidates. So we do this in alphabetical order, so Val Arsvold will be first.
All right, if it's okay, I will go ahead. Good afternoon. I'm Val Arsvold, and I have dedicated my career of nearly 3 decades to growing opportunities for students, first as an agricultural education instructor for the communities of Wilmer and Plainview, and then as the executive director for the Minnesota FFA Foundation, where I build mutually beneficial partnerships. This experience and my commitment to hearing from many voices has prepared me to represent the 1st Congressional District to conduct the important work of the University of Minnesota. The university, with its 5 campuses, is uniquely positioned to serve students and really all Minnesotans. Being from the 1st Congressional District, I'm proud but not surprised that UMR would lead the way in delivering innovative programs that educate and prepare students to meet the growing needs for trained healthcare professionals. NextGen Med will be delivered in partnership with the Mayo Clinic and Google. I'm confident that this partnership will not only serve our state, but will be a model for other higher education institutions worldwide as we emerge from the pandemic. We are proud of our world-class medical system, and we are equally proud of the other business and industries that make up over 92% of the career opportunities and the tremendous economic growth within our district. In my work with over 35,000 AFNR students, I see many students leave our state to further their education, in part because of concerns over tuition costs. Some come back to Minnesota communities, while many others do not return, and their skills and innovation will benefit other states. Only 14% of the Twin City campus students are from Greater Minnesota, and although other campus numbers are up from this, it is not at a level that is needed to best serve our state. We have a responsibility.
Wrap up. Your time's up. Wrap up.
Okay. We have a responsibility to ensure all students have access. I'm committed to addressing tuition costs, growing a diverse university community, and fulfilling the mission as the state's university land grant institution. Thank you.
Thank you. Ruth Johnson. Ruth, you're muted.
All right, do I get to start again?
You get to start again.
Okay, thank you. All right, good evening, Chair Tomasotti and Chair Bernardi and Higher Education Committee members, fellow candidates. I've spent my career in the practice of medicine and in leadership in medical education. As a physician specializing in internal medicine, my first patients at Mayo Clinic were from the farms and towns of the southern Minnesota. In 1993, I became the founding director of the Mayo Breast Clinic, an innovative program for women with breast cancer that continues to serve 10,000 women every year. And currently, I care for business and professional people in Mayo's executive health program. I've been a pioneer in medical education, and early in my career, I was appointed associate director of our internal medicine residency program and its first woman leader. I also taught and chaired the bioethics courses at Mayo Medical School for a decade, and I created innovative curricula for both. I'm now in my 17th year on the admissions committee of our medical scientist training program. I've been a tireless advocate for the recruiting and mentoring of outstanding young people for careers as physician scientists. And I parlayed all of this experience into higher education, dedicating 16 years to the Board of Regents of Augsburg University, my alma mater, in both Minneapolis and Rochester. And I understand governance in higher education. Regents are charged with oversight and not with micromanagement. Teamwork is essential to any enterprise, and I am a team player. I would work for the best interests of the University of Minnesota, its students, faculty, and staff, as I have for every institution I've served. And I have no personal or partisan agenda here at all. As a physician, my work is this. I meet people from all walks of life. I listen to their stories. I ask probing questions to clarify and consider preliminary diagnoses. I work with them and other tests and specialists to determine correct diagnoses, and then in partnership with them, create treatment programs that are consistent with their values and preferences. This requires openness, humility, and a deep interest in them as people. President Teddy Roosevelt said, "Nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care." And I would bring that ethic of caring and a legacy of leadership, innovation, and teamwork to my work as a regent. Thank you for your dedication to this responsibility.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So members, now we're going to move on to the candidate interview. Candidates will be interviewed as a group. 15 minute total will be allotted. Once the 15 minutes is done, a majority of the committee can vote to extend the interview for an additional 5 minutes. And any committee member may ask a question. Unless the question is posed to a specific candidate, all candidates will be given a chance to answer the question that is posed. So at this point, I will open up the floor to any questions from the committee. We'll start the clock after the first question. I feel like this is like Family Feud. We won't start until there's actually a question. All right, let me start out with one then. why do you want to be a regent of the University of Minnesota? And that's for both of you, so you can go in either order. Since Belle went first, how about if you go first this time?
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni, for that question. Well, I'm interested in this position because I believe it can make a difference. I have a number in my background, an interest long-term in education. I'm particularly interested in trying to work with the University of Minnesota for its very important medical school and related schools. So for instance, of the $4.2 billion budget of the University of Minnesota, 40% of that goes to our academic health center. Those are six schools, the schools of medicine, dentistry, veterinary medicine, pharmacy, nursing, and public health. Those are incredibly important. And the University of Minnesota has been a leader in those areas over many decades. I was delighted to see that the College of Pharmacy is still rated number two in the United States. My father was a graduate of that school in 1951. The medical school had long been in the top 10 of medical schools around the country. There are 155 accredited medical schools in the United States, but in recent years, the university has slipped down in its ratings into the 40s. I think that it has great potential to climb back up in terms of its important research activities, as well as in increasing and improving clinical activities. I think I have a great deal of knowledge and interest in this area and be delighted to work with Dean Jacob Tolar and others to look at ways that we can continue to move forward in the great tradition that we have for our medical school and all our health-related programs. If you look, you see that Dr. Michael Osterholm, who is kind of a national treasure, has been in the news extensively, someone we can all be proud of from the School of Public Health and in Epidemiology. I think we have great capacity to attract students from Minnesota and keep them here in our state so that they have their education here and continue then to work here, providing both services and care and improving the economy of this state. That's just one dimension of what I'm interested in.
Okay, thank you. Belle?
Sure. Senator Tomasoni and committee, thank you so much. I really would sum it up initially as putting students first. I have the privilege of working with thousands of students across the state every year, and I want those students to have a viable option with the University of Minnesota. I feel that there are underserved populations that need to be reached, and they need to have access to this quality education. I think that we can increase our diversity, whether that comes from our rural communities, our urban communities, populations that at this point are not being served. I'm committed to being part of the solution. When one of my visits with a state senator challenged me to think about a certain area that we have not always reached at the University of Minnesota, I took that to the next level, and I contacted an admissions counselor that specialized in that area so that I would not assume what the barriers were to the University of Minnesota, but rather hear from the very population of people that would like to have access to the University of Minnesota. I think student debt is certainly something that weighs on me. I'm the parent of college-age children and their University of Minnesota graduates, and I want our college to be affordable to our students in Minnesota. I want it to be attractive to those that could come and make a difference. I want our students to be educated in Minnesota so they stay in Minnesota, so that they find their home here in our communities and develop those skills and abilities and give back. I'm a little organic in that I was, I saw the email came out and I said, I want to be involved. But it's not the first time I've been involved with the University of Minnesota. I've dedicated a lot of volunteer time and effort because I saw the value of my education and those across the state, but also the other pillars of our land grant institution. And I want to be part of that.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just follow up on that a minute?
Yeah, go ahead, but make it quick.
Yep. I just want to mention that among the things that I've done both at Mayo Clinic and at Augsburg University has to do to opening the doors to women and underrepresented minorities in all of these fields. I partly stayed on the MD-PhD committee for 17 years so that I can continue in that leadership position in doing that. And we've been very successful in that. And I would also note that Augsburg University probably has one of the most diverse student populations of any private liberal arts college in this state and has been very successful in that. So building on both of those experiences, I would be very much a leader in that.
Okay, thank you. Val, I'll give you another minute if you want to follow up also.
Sure, and I'll just quickly share that I recognize that Dr. Johnson does great things with the health area, but I too share a passion for it. That is not where my professional education is, but as part of coming up to speed on that, I have had conversations with UMD students who are committed to getting their education and returning back to rural Minnesota. Recognizing that's an area of growth for me, I reached out to those that are directly impacted and will continue to do that while serving as a regent.
Okay, thank you. Representative Noor, you'll be next, but it occurs to me we should probably have a time limit on the answers too. So let's answer the questions in a minute and a half. So, Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is in relation to an issue that both candidates have brought forward, the issue about justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. I just wanted to know from their practical sense, we know there's some challenges at the University of Minnesota in how to address those challenges. What have they done or what will they bring to the table to be more inclusive and to have an equitable results for the students at the University of Minnesota?
Okay, Val, you go first.
Sure, thank you, Representative. In my conversation with Deanna Loggins, the admissions counselor for African-American recruitment at the University of Minnesota, she really challenged me to understand that the problem is even before they are applying to colleges. But we did focus a lot on how can we remove some of those barriers. ACT scores or other standardized tests can be a barrier. If they haven't had access to the education leading up to those tests, suddenly their scores may not be reflected of the true knowledge and talent that they have. And so that was one of the barriers. Finding the resources to get them to apply and to consider it is important. But then once they're on the university, how are we building a culture that supports them and that they see themselves in each other and can come through the university and be successful as a group? So I think there's great potential, but I was very appreciative of Deanna Loggins' knowledge about how we could grow in that area. Thank you.
Representative Noor, you wanted both candidates to answer?
I'd like
yes,
to
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's very important that we start early and help people who see that their opportunities are there for them. I've been instrumental here at Mayo in developing a program we call Native Pathways. It's working with a Native American woman who's on the board of the American Indian College Fund and the dean of Mayo Medical School. Native Pathways initiated last summer, in the summer of 2000, with the pandemic and by virtual means. But we had 15 tribal members from around the United States who were part of that program. They were juniors and seniors in college, and we connected them with both Native physicians and others here in leadership and medical education. And they came away with a strong sense that this was something that they could do. These were opportunities they may not have thought of before, but see that there are opportunities for them. And by meeting with others who are leaders already in their community, that's been very, very helpful. And this summer, we'll continue that. And this time, we'll bring in high school students as well, as it's important to get an early start and think as early as possible about career options.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is posed to both of the region candidates. It is no surprise to anyone on this committee that the university is currently wrestling with a deficit in their budget. And as fiduciaries as regents are to the budget and to the stewardship of the resources granted them by the university, by University of Minnesota students, as well as the state of Minnesota, I'm looking to both of you for an understanding in terms of what your specific, very granular objectives would be in terms of closing that gap. Platitudes are what we all hear, but I would like and appreciate, and I think for the benefit of everyone on this committee, if you would be as specific as you possibly can.
I think you're first, Ruth.
Okay. Well, Representative Albright, thank you for that question. It's a tough question. You know, whenever one assumes the responsibility of being on a board, one has to learn the details of budgets, and I've been starting to study those things. I would have to work with current regents and others to learn more so they could be more specific about how we would address those. It's very important, obviously. I agree.
Well.
Thank you so much for the question. And, you know, a couple of things. I am always one that tries to find the positive in a situation. So the pandemic has certainly caused a lot of inconvenience and challenges and troubles. But I am really optimistic at how we could now look at online education as part of the solution, that we could grow the number of University of Minnesota students, and their tuition may help grow the numbers because they are taking the classes online. We turn down many quality students each and every year from walking the campus because our facilities can't support it. But in this online era, I am really convinced that we can grow opportunities and help students get through that education, still support it. But the non-traditional students that might be limited by financial resources or time that might not be able to walk the campus could now take our classes. The tuition that would come through online learning would help create some additional revenue. Thank you.
I'd like to just follow that up briefly with the highlighting the hybrid degree program that's currently being developed here at the University of Minnesota Rochester. And this is a wonderful program that is work together for the University of Minnesota Rochester, Google, and the Mayo Clinic. And among the things this new hybrid program will, which will start in 2022, will use Google's platform to have both virtual and on-campus experiences for people. We expect this could greatly enlarge the number of students that we could enter into this program, and the students can complete it in a little over 2.5 years. They would pay the tuition, but they'd have less cost for room and board and other things. So these kind of integrated programs with hybrid platforms, I think, are one excellent way of cutting costs and continuing growing programs at the same time.
Val, do you want to follow up?
I really think it's going to be a time when we look at new creative ways, and I think we'll reach students also on our outstate community, our outstate colleges, rather, as tuition. And tuition will be the same or have its cost, but the room and board certainly is different when people look at innovative ways to get their education.
Okay, thank you. Representative Thompson, committee, I think it's a really good idea. There's only 2 minutes left in the 15-minute period, so does anybody object to extending the question and answer for 5 minutes? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We'll extend the question and answer for 5 minutes then. Okay, Representative Thompson.
Just one quick question. We talk a lot about cost of tuition, and but non-tuition expenses like textbooks, food, and housing continue to be put college out of reach for more of the students. I'm asking, what strategies would you pursue to make sure that the universities play an active role in meeting the basic needs for our students?
Ruth, I think it's Ruth's turn to go first.
Okay. Right? I think it wasn't.
Okay. Or did I get that wrong?
I think you did.
Okay, Val, go ahead.
I think we need to own that is the student's entire college experience that we need to be a partner in. So when we look at student housing, we need to be active in acknowledging and the role of housing in and around campus. So as new facilities go up, is it affordable to students? And what can we do to be influencing that? When it comes to food insecurity, first, we have to acknowledge that it exists. And second, we have to put programs in place to help those students, because obviously they might have obtained the funds to start, but they have to be successful there. And if they don't have the cost of the books and the food and a place to live, that's a problem. So I think the Board of Regents needs to look at the entire experience that a university student goes through and put strategic things in place. And I think that's the lens at which we need to look at it. As the mother of two boys up at the U of M, I want them to be cared for from the time they walk on campus to the time they end. And it's way beyond just that tuition check that they've submitted.
Okay, Ruth.
Yeah, I do think that affordable housing is a very important thing. And so that that is something that we as regents would really need to look at and do everything possible to make available to students. And it's quite clear that students, if they have affordable housing and can live on campus with and near other students in their freshman and sophomore years, they're far more likely to be successful academically and stay in school so they can finish. We don't want students to accumulate debt and then not finish because they just are getting, they're not on campus, they don't have others to support them. And I think also we should look at having really excellent career counseling services for students to help them find ways to manage and to be efficient in their living expenses, and perhaps also a further look at on-campus employment as another way to earn some money while they're in that setting.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Going once. Going twice, I declare the question and answer session closed. So members, here's how we will proceed. Now that the interviews are closed, we're going to move to a vote immediately. The CLA from each body will take the roll call of their own members. The body that is chairing takes the roll call first, so the Senate will go first. If a second ballot is needed, the other body will take the roll call first and switching until the balloting has concluded. So the chair will announce the total votes for each question. So, Laura, take the vote of the Senate.
Senator Clausen? Senator Goggin?
Hang on. Senator Clausen, you got to unmute. Tomasoni voted for Johnson.
Senator Clausen?
Ruth Johnson.
Senator Goggin?
Val Arsvold.
Senator Brzezinski?
Brzezinski votes Arsvold.
Senator Putnam?
Johnson.
Senator Rarick?
Arsvold.
Okay, and now the CLA from the House, would you take the roll?
Representative Bernardi.
Dr. Ruth Johnson.
Representative Christensen.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative O'Neill.
Arsvold.
Representative Albright.
Arsvold.
Representative Daniels.
Arsvold.
Representative Erickson.
Arsvold.
Representative Hansen.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative Heintzman. Representative Heintzman. Representative Howard.
Johnson.
Representative Keeler.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative Cleavorn.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative Kosnick.
Arsvold.
Representative Kresha.
Arsvold.
Representative Mason. Representative Mason.
I apologize, Dr. Johnson.
Representative Meckland.
Arsvold.
Representative Noor.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative Sandell.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative Sandsted.
Arsvold.
And Representative Thompson.
Oswald.
Could the CA please call Representative Heinzman again?
Representative Heinzman.
Oswald. Oswald.
Okay, Heinzman votes Oswald.
I got that wrong. Yeah, I got my vote wrong. I meant
to put the Senate vote was 3-3.
Pardon me. I meant to say Johnson.
Representative Thompson, would you mute yourself, please?
No, I meant to say Johnson. I said Oswald.
Oh, you want to change your vote?
Okay. Yes.
All right. Representative Bernardi, what was the House vote?
I want to consult with my committee legislative assistant. Since someone changed their vote, I want to verify what the vote total was. If she could share that with me, and then I'll repeat it.
Okay.
Okay, we have 10 for Johnson and 9 for Oswald, excuse me.
Okay, so we don't have a decision. So according to the rules, we take one more vote, and this time. The vote starts with the House. So if your CLA would like to take the roll again, we can start a second time.
Representative Bernardi.
Johnson.
Representative Christensen.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative O'Neill.
Oswald.
Representative Albright.
Oswald.
Representative Daniels. Representative Daniels. Representative Erickson.
Oswald.
I'm sorry, Representative Erickson, Representative Daniels, I think you were on mute. I'll circle back around. Representative Hansen.
Representative Hansen votes Dr. Johnson.
Representative Heinzman.
Oswald.
Representative Howard.
Johnson.
Representative Keeler.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative Cleavorn.
Dr. Johnson.
Representative Kosnick.
Oswald.
Representative Kreisha.
Oswald.
Representative Mason.
Johnson.
Representative Mecklund.
Arsvald.
Representative Noor.
Johnson.
Representative Sandell.
Johnson.
Representative Sandsted.
Arsvald.
And Representative Thompson.
Johnson.
And I'm just going to circle back to Representative Daniels because I did not hear that.
Hear me now?
Yes.
Arsvald.
Okay.
Hey, Laura, take the role of the Senate.
Senator Tomasoni.
Johnson.
Senator Klassen.
Dr. Johnson.
Senator Duggan.
Arsvald.
Senator Jasinski.
Arsvald.
Senator Putnam.
Dr. Johnson.
Senator Rarick.
Arsvald.
Gee, the Senate vote was 3-3, and I think the House vote was 10-9 again. Am I correct on that? We're in the middle of a roll call. Representative Bernardi, is 10-9 correct?
I am going to confirm with Ms. Mouse again. I was.
That is correct.
10-9 to Johnson, 9 Arsvald.
Okay. Then, having reached an impasse after two rounds of voting without dropping a candidate, I'll move that the remaining candidates be recommended to the joint convention as a slate. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is adopted.
Here, you have to ask for the no.
Oh, sorry. All those opposed? Okay, I was right the first time. Motion prevailed. Okay, all right. Representative Bernardi, the gavel passes to you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni, for leading us off. Appreciate that. We are now moving to the fourth district. Before we move into the candidate presentations, I will stop to ask if there are any nominations for further recommendations in the fourth congressional district. I see some hands up, and hold on 1 second. I need to get my participants showing with the hands up here. Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, that was my mistake.
Representative Noor.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to request a brief recess before we go into the conversation for the 4th District, if that is possible. I haven't made the motion, but I just wanted to get to make that motion for a brief recess so we can have a little bit of a discussion about the procedures before we reconvene.
Thank you. I will call the meeting into recess. Into session, into our committee. We're now finished with our recess. Call us back to order. Where we left off was just, I just want to just make sure that if there is anyone, there was some hands up and they didn't mean to have their hands up. I just want to make sure and ask if there are any nominations for further recommendations in the 4th Congressional District. I do not see any raised hands this time as well, so I will begin by giving each candidate a chance to introduce themselves. Candidates will have up to 2 minutes for their introduction, and we will go in alphabetical order by last name. The first nominee will be Brandon Elkire. Welcome to the committee. And I'm going to have you proceed in just a second here. I'm just getting my clock, my two-minute clock ready. Let's see. Okay, you may proceed. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elkire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I start, I want to say thank you for this opportunity. It's an honor and privilege to appear in front of a such distinguished body. My name is Daryl Brandon Elkire. I go by Brandon. I'm a Dakota citizen of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. I'm a U.S. Navy veteran. I'm a member of the LGBTQIA community, and I'm dad to three amazing sons. Currently, I work as director for the Justice for Families Project in the 4th Judicial District. And so tonight, there are three principal takeaways that I'm hoping to convey to this body about my candidacy. First, representation. You just heard the various communities that I embody. These are not just labels, but valuable lived experience that has not had a voice on the University of Minnesota Region Board to date. Now, I represent the Native American community of our state, but I also embody the various intersections here. And then within those intersections are intersections, right? So this lived experience, this empowerment from these communities is some kind of, brings a lot of diversity to the board and can be very effective when looking at the type of students that we're trying to recruit and retain. Under my representation, I believe that we need this voice on the board to help diversify current voices. Second, access. I have the belief that an effective board has two main components. First, there's the governing component, which we all know is at the core of this volunteer position. But secondly, there's an experience component, which I call the U of M experience, which includes students, faculty, and staff experience. Now, this experience is required for governance, I believe.
Mr. Elkire, your 2 minutes are up. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we have James Farnsworth. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Farnsworth.
Good evening.
Oh, I see. Oh, goody. Okay, you may begin.
Thank you, and good evening, Chair Bernardi, Chair Tomasoni, and members of the House and Senate Higher Education Finance and Policy Committees. It's an honor to be with you as a candidate for the 4th Congressional District seat on the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. The university has a special place in the heart of my family. My mom graduated from the Twin Cities campus and went on to spend over 30 years as a classroom teacher in Minneapolis Public Schools. My dad recently utilized the Senior Citizen Education Program, which is a program I believe to be a fantastic example of the land-grant mission of the institution. I've spent the last 4 years as a student on the Twin Cities campus pursuing a degree in human resource development in the College of Education and Human Development. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time at the university and am now seeking to give back by serving as a regent. I've been grateful for the opportunity to visit with many of you over the past month. We've discussed topics surrounding the liberal arts, how to ensure the university remains accessible to underrepresented student populations, the new MPACT system-wide strategic plan and related evaluation metrics, public safety on campus, how the university should navigate out of the COVID-19 related budget deficit, how to ensure the proper resources are dedicated to supporting the St. Paul campus, which is a major gateway for students from Greater Minnesota, and so many other important subjects. I believe I'm well positioned to be a regent given my diverse personal background, extensive service within university governance and in external governance roles, and my keen understanding of what it means to be a student during these ever-changing times. As a regent, you can count on me to always be accessible, transparent, and available for engagement. Additionally, due to my background knowledge of and experience within university operations, I will be a persistent voice at the table for accountability and outcomes. As a fiduciary of the university on behalf of the people of Minnesota, I will take my role as a regent incredibly seriously. I'm grateful to be here tonight and look forward to answering any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Farnsworth. Next that we'll be presenting before our committee is Karen Shanfield. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Shanfield.
Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Bernardi, Chair Tomasoni, committee members, candidates, and members of the public. Thank you for your time this evening and for the many good conversations we've had in the last several weeks. Whether it was the Alumni Association Candidate Forum, the RCAC interviews, individual or group Zooms, email, texts, or what now seems a little bit old-fashioned, phone calls, I've had a chance to hear your thoughts and I've enjoyed that. I appreciate your commitment to the success of the University of Minnesota and to serving our state in these very trying and very consequential times. Of course, none of us knows what the future holds. When you choose regents, you are really choosing leaders who not only appreciate what the university does, education, research, and outreach, but how best to do it. I can contribute to the how in three important ways. First, independent judgment. I am not a rubber stamp or a micromanager. I speak up when I disagree, and I don't disagree simply for the sake of doing so. Second, collaboration. I'm a team player. I put my ego to the side. I seek to understand different points of view, and I look for ways to reach common ground for the greater good. That is the important role of a regent. And third, accountability. I do my homework. I take the time to ask questions, to understand facts, and to consider various points of view. I communicate transparently with stakeholders and colleagues. I seek consensus, and I hold those who are responsible for implementing crucial decisions accountable. The university is my alma mater. I'm proud that I received both my undergraduate and law degrees from this fine state institution. I've had the good fortune of working for this university and a lot of other colleges and universities for the last 40 years. During that time, I've helped make a lot of hard, sometimes controversial decisions, and I've dealt successfully with the public reactions to those hard decisions.
Thank you, Ms. Shanfield. Your time is completed. Appreciate
that. Thank you.
Next, we'll move into our 15-minute question and answer portion. Members, please raise your hand on Zoom if you would like to ask a question. And we will do this, we will allow responses to be 90 seconds as Senator Tomasoni had done the last time. So I look to see if we have any questions up. And since we don't have any hands up right now that I see, I'm gonna start with a question. Oh, we have one. Okay, I will start with Representative Knorr. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is similar to the first one that I asked. I care deeply about justice, equity, inclusion, and diversity. So my key question, what have you done and what will you do different in order to ensure that the university has got an equitable process and also equitable outcome, particularly for BIPOC students, BIPOC staff, and most of the individuals who are represented through the University of Minnesota?
We will start in reverse order and have Ms. Shanfield start with that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to your question, Representative Knorr, I've got a good wealth of experience dealing with these issues in a number of nonprofit organizations and also in some for-profit organizations. One of the things I've learned is we have to reach out to potential students at a very young age. We don't wait until they're in high school. We start establishing relationships early. And I think building those relationships is at the core of creating a sound pathway for advancement. Once those students are in the University of Minnesota, we make sure that it is a welcoming place. We make sure that there are good supports in place, and we make sure that they are successful. That is our goal, and that ought to be our mission because we are student-driven. If it weren't for students, there wouldn't be a University of Minnesota. So that I want to be mindful of the time here and make sure my colleagues have a chance to answer the question as well. But in a nutshell, that's the way I would approach the issue, and I think we can do better, frankly, than we've done.
Thank you. Next, we will go to Mr. Farnsworth.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative Noor, for the question. I would briefly touch on four things. One would be making sure we have culturally competent admissions and marketing practices. I think it's really important to ensure that our admissions approaches and our processes are open and accessible for underrepresented communities. So I think that's number one. Number two would be targeted program investments. So making sure that we are funding programs such as MK, which is the Multicultural Center for Academic Excellence, and PES, which is a Presidential Emerging Scholars Program. And there are a lot of other programs per college that ensure and center and provide resources to marginalized and underrepresented student populations. The third thing would be to make sure that we're really, really hitting out of the park all of the metrics under the strategic plan around sense of belonging. As a student of color myself, I've experienced that firsthand and see why students of color have been consistently marking on the student satisfaction survey that's a sense of belonging with a low score. So we need to get at that. And then mentorship and mentorship programs as well outside of traditional academic advising are really important to invest in and ensure that sense of belonging for underrepresented students. Thank you again for the question.
And Mr. Alkire.
Thank you, and thank you for that question. I too have actually, at my time at the University of Minnesota, I've published a paper on the sense of belonging from a BIPOC point of view. And the recommendations we gave in that paper when looking at public institutions like the University of Minnesota were investing in various programming, looking at admissions and looking at who the students are when they come through the door, even with a financial aid package, because it goes more than just investing in programs that we oversee, right? It also has to look at how they walk through the door. So a lot of our students that come from communities of color and indigenous communities don't come as traditional students, and we know this from research. So we should be looking at how financial aid packages are even structured to help support them in that first year. And we also know that that first year is crucial when BIPOC students actually come through our door. So I would look into admission practices and really giving them the support they need in that first year.
Thank you very much. And I, members, have any other questions? I will ask the next question. Why do you want to be a regent? And we will start with Ms. Shanfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that question. You know, I've spent the last 50 years in the workforce and the last 40 of them as a teacher, a mediator, and a lawyer. And I have a great sense of responsibility in these very difficult times to reach out and try to help those institutions that I care most about. The University of Minnesota has been a part of my life since I graduated from high school, and it is important to me to do my best to help this institution. I want to see our students succeed. I want to see them have an opportunity to expand their horizons, to leave school without the burden of unsaleable debt that they can't handle. And I want to see our research succeed as well. It's very important as we think about the tripartite mission of the university that our students succeed, our research succeeds and keeps us as a top flight university. And of course, all of that feeds our outreach to Minnesotans and helps build and strengthen our state economy. I think all three of those are critically important, and I want to contribute to those. Thank you.
We will go next to Mr. Alkire.
Thank you for the question, Chairwoman Bernardi. I have a passion for the University of Minnesota. It really did change my life and my life trajectory. As I grew up on the reservation on Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, you don't dream of becoming a lawyer. You don't dream of going to law school, much less a huge university like the University of Minnesota. So what you dream of is going to the Navy, and that's what I did. And so when I got out, I was able to go to the University of Minnesota as a Navy vet, and it really did change the trajectory of my life. And I believe that education is one of the key components to pushing back against poverty. So I think that every opportunity that we can give as an institution to those underserved communities who may be struggling with poverty, we should be doing and helping lower those barriers. And there are many in our state. And I represent the Native American community within our state. That is one key component to helping push back against poverty and changing life trajectories.
And then we will move on to Mr. Farnsworth.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, for the question. For me, it really narrows down to this being an extremely critical moment in time for the university. The university will be dealing with the budget deficit created by COVID-19 or in part due to COVID-19, along with the chance to implement a new strategic plan, the newly created strategic plan with the evaluation metrics as well. And I believe I would bring a really uniquely qualified voice to that conversation, someone who's had experience being a pandemic student, as well as someone who has spent the last 4 years intricately involved with university governance and external governance roles as well. So being able to jump in and approach that job and the really important short-term and long-term issues in front of the board and be able to tackle those head-on with the knowledge of the operations of the university and how the place works. I want to bring my diverse personal background to the table as well to be able to lift up student voices and other voices that have not traditionally been represented at the table before. And, you know, I have, as I kind of mentioned in my opening introductory comments, the university has a really important place in my family and has been really important to me as well. And I would love to have the honor to take my skills and give back to the institution and serve the state as well.
Okay, now we'll move on to our next question. Senator Tomassoni has his hand up. Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Labor relations and collective bargaining are a huge part of making the university work. What is your opinion and approach to dealing with labor relations and collective bargaining, and how do you think they should be treated?
We will start with Mr. Farnsworth.
Thank you, Chair Tomassoni, for the question. For me, the Board of Regents obviously has a lot of intersections with this topic, particularly when the board approves contracts with labor unions at the University of Minnesota. And as an HR major, and as someone who has worked in HR and understands the different groups at the university, obviously the bargaining units and the labor units in kind of a narrow scope, but also just the people that run the university and are represented in those groups are really critical to the mission and the operations of the university. So I have a pretty decent understanding of labor relations as it relates to the business of the Board of Regents. And I would want to thoroughly engage those groups, just like any other stakeholders at the university who deserve to have a voice at the table and in Board of Regents level conversations. So thanks again for the question.
Ms. Shanfield.
Thank you, Senator Tomassoni. I appreciate the question. Let me start by saying I support employees' rights to choose union representation. Close to 20% of University of Minnesota employees have already done that. That's a bit higher than the national average, and I think it strengthens our university that they have. The relationship between a union, employees, and the employer must be respectful, and it must be productive. My understanding is that that has been the case by and large at the University of Minnesota over many years. And I take some pride in knowing that because I was actually the first in-house labor relations attorney that the university hired. I was hired just after the faculty organized at the Duluth and Waseca campuses. And one of my goals when I came in was to work hard at setting a tone of mutual respect. I felt I had accomplished it when I left the university and moved on to private practice. In private practice, I've represented a large public sector union. I've represented employees and employers in public and private sectors, unionized and not. That experience gives me certain insights that I would bring to the Board of Regents. I believe those insights will be helpful in seeing that the relationships between the university and the labor unions who comprise its employees remain respectful and productive. I'm happy to answer more questions about the subject or talk about it in greater detail if anybody has further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We have, enough time for another question. If we just all vote quickly to just extend it for 5 minutes so we can get our last question in here by Representative Albright. I'd like to make a motion to extend the minute for 5 more minutes to get Representative Albright's question asked. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Okay, the motion carries. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To each of the region candidates for the 4th Congressional District. University of Minnesota is a land-grant institution, and you are elected by the joint body of the legislature. With that being said, my question to each of you is, if you are elected as a regent, who are you then accountable to?
We will start with Mr. Alkire. Mr. Alkire.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Albright. It seems simplistic on its face, but it is a very tough question. I believe that there is accountability to, in my opening, I said there's a governance component, which is at the core of the volunteer work, but there's also this experience component. And I believe that that accountability comes from that experience component within the people who we are set forth to govern. I also believe because we are elected by this body that there is a high degree of accountability here when looking at transcribing your intent for different congressional or legislation when it includes the University of Minnesota. So the accountability piece is to the faculty, staff, and students who pay the tuition to go to this great institution, and then to this body who oversees the budget for it. So there is 2 degrees of accountability on both parts.
And Mr. Alkire, I just wanted to ask you a question. Did I miss you on that last question?
You did, and that's fine.
Okay. We can go to you after. We'll go after you, and I apologize for that. We will go to this the same question for that Representative Albright asked. We will now go to James Farnsworth. Mr. Farnsworth, excuse me.
Yes, and thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative Albright, for the question. I think it's multifaceted. I think in terms of thinking who regents are accountable to, I think there's obviously the immediate university stakeholders, so the students, staff, faculty, and other folks who work at the university. I think regents are accountable, as I kind of mentioned earlier, that regents are fiduciaries of the university and accountable to the citizens of the state of Minnesota. So I think that's particularly important. I think if you're a district representative, a congressional district representative, like all of us would be, you have a special obligation to the folks that live in the congressional district that you'd be representing. And I think the state legislature is another important stakeholder due to the university's unique relationship with the legislature. I don't think there's one main stakeholder group that regents are accountable to. I really think it depends on the issue. It depends on the topic. And I'm somebody who really believes in, as a core role of a governing board member, accessibility and transparency and accountability. So I view those as particularly important tenets of a governing board member and would take that accountability factor of myself and my service very seriously. So thanks again for the question.
And Ms. Shanfield.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And to your question, Representative Albright, the Board of Regents does have a fiduciary responsibility, and that fiduciary responsibility is to the state of Minnesota. It is true, elected by partisans like yourselves, but once we take the oath of serving as a regent, our responsibility is to do what is in the best interest of the University of Minnesota and, by extension, the citizens of our state. We should not be beholden to any political party, to any particular ideology, or to advancing our own interests. Our job is to advance the interests of the University of Minnesota and to act for the greater good. Thank you.
Okay, and Senator Tomasoni, I am wondering if you can restate your question for Mr. Elkire, and I do see your hand up, and I'm not sure if it's that or if you have an additional question.
Well, I just, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to follow up with Ms. Shanfield about her answer about unions, and I know you've dealt with unions, and you've been a labor union lawyer, and you mentioned having mutual respect, and my conversations with the unions, they seem to have issues with you. So can you elaborate on that and explain to me what is your actual relationship with the unions at the university?
Ms. Shanfield.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Tomasoni. You know, I have not worked with unions at the University of Minnesota for several years. I have done some work on the behalf of the university since leaving, but my involvement really on a day-to-day basis is quite old. I have, though, heard by rumor and by second and third hand innuendo that there are the concerns that you mentioned. And I want to say I have always had successful and productive relationships with unions. I would value the opportunity to speak firsthand with the folks who think otherwise. I've handled some contentious cases. We haven't always agreed, but we've always been able to do that in a respectful fashion. And so I'm a little bit puzzled, frankly, about the source of these allegations. Thank you.
And then, okay, thank you. And Senator Tomasoni, can you just we have just 2 minutes left. If you could just restate that question for Mr. Elkire, and then we will finish up our question and answer.
And Brandon, I just wanted to know how you treat unions, how you would treat unions, how important the unions are to you, and how do they fit into the relationships and operations of the university?
Mr. Elkire.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. I grew up, my grandfather was a part of the unions growing up, so I've always heard his firsthand account of what it was like to be in a union. He was pro-union, obviously, because he belonged to one. But aside from that, I don't have much interaction personally with unions. I believe that the relationship between union and employer should be amicable, as it was stated here earlier. But beyond that, I would have to consult with the other regents to understand fully what the relationship is currently at the University of Minnesota, and then act accordingly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now we have just concluded our 15 minutes of question and answers. Thank you, Regent candidates and members. So we're going to move on to the vote. The House Clerk will take the roll of the House, and then the Senate Clerk will take the roll in the Senate. Ms. Mouse, you may proceed.
Chair Bernardi.
Elkire.
Representative Christensen.
Elkire.
Representative O'Neill.
Shanfield.
Representative Albright.
Shanfield.
Representative Daniels.
Shanfield.
Representative Erickson.
Shanfield.
Representative Hansen.
Elkire.
Representative Heitzman.
Canfield.
Representative Howard.
Elkire.
Representative Keeler.
Elkire.
Representative Cleavorne.
Elkire.
Representative Kosnick.
Canfield.
Representative Kresha.
Canfield.
Representative Mason. Representative Mason.
Sorry, Elkire.
Representative Meckland.
Shanfield.
Representative Noor.
Elkire.
Representative Sandell.
Elkire.
Representative Sandsted.
Alkire.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, Alkire.
There are 11 votes for Alkire, 8 for Shanfield, and none for Farnsworth.
And now we will proceed with the roll of the Senate.
Chair Tomasoni.
Farnsworth.
Senator Claflin.
Alkire.
Senator Goggin.
Shanfield.
Senator Jasinski. Senator Jasinski. Senator Putnam.
Alkire.
Senator Rarick.
Shanfield.
Go back to Senator Jasinski.
Muted.
Senator Jasinski.
Sorry, folks. Give Senator Jasinski about 30 seconds to a minute. He got caught up in something for a little bit. Apologies.
I think Representative Hall.
Senator Jasinski.
Sorry, folks. He's turning the corner right now. He's trying to get to his Zoom. His button's stuck.
Thank you. Sorry, I was just finishing up my testimony in another committee. I believe the vote is District 4. Jasinski votes Shanfield.
Vote is 2 for Alkire, 1 for Farnsworth, and 3 for Shanfield.
Okay, we now, the candidate that will, that had, candidate Farnsworth has the fewest votes and will be dropped. The clerk will now take the roll for the second round of voting between Mr. Alkire and Ms. Shanfield as candidates. Ms. Mouse, you may proceed.
Chair Bernardi.
Alkire.
Representative Christensen.
Alkire.
Representative O'Neill.
Shanfield.
Representative Albright.
Shanfield.
Representative Daniels.
Shanfield.
Representative Erickson.
Shanfield.
Representative Hansen.
Alkire.
Representative Heintzman.
Shanfield.
Representative Howard.
Alkire.
Representative Keeler.
Alkire.
Representative Cleborne.
Alkire.
Representative Kosnick.
Shanfield.
Representative Kresha.
Shanfield.
Representative Mason.
Alkire.
Representative Meckland.
Shanfield.
Representative Noor.
Alkire.
Representative Sandell.
Alkire.
Representative Sandsted.
Alkire.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, Alkire.
So 11 for Alkire and 8 for Shanfield.
Now the Senate CLA may proceed with the vote.
Alkire.
Senator Klassen?
Alkire.
Senator Gagin?
Shanfield.
Senator Jasinski?
Shanfield.
Senator Putnam?
Alkire.
And Senator Rarick?
Shanfield.
The vote is 3 for Alkire and 3 for Shanfield.
With a vote of 11 for Alkire in the House and 8 for Shanfield in the House, in the Senate, Alkire was 3 and Shanfield with 3. We have reached an impasse after 2 rounds of voting. And I, without dropping a candidate, I will move that the remaining candidates be recommended to the Joint Convention as a slate. All those in favor. Say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. The motion carries, and we will be moving forward. Mr. Alkire and Ms. Shanfield. Now I will turn over the gavel to Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We will move on now to Congressional District 6, and we'll go in alphabetical order. And the nominees from the RCAT are Dave Hoag, Michael Hsu, and Cody Verhollen. Does anybody desire to nominate someone else? Seeing no hands, I will now move on to the two-minute statements by each of our candidates. So, Dave, you go first.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. Good evening, committee chairs, member, and fellow candidates. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm honored to participate in the selection of regents. Throughout this process, I realized that my participation is so much more than earning a seat at the table. It gives me the opportunity to deeply reflect on the qualifications that I would bring to the board and how I would serve the university. While you can see clearly all the tangible qualifications that I presented in my application, I want to use this time to talk about how my life experience as political refugees that will help me make an effective board member who will be able to tackle the university's most challenging issues. Being political refugees means having been on both the winning and losing side of politics. We understand deeply and profoundly that politics are much more than just rhetoric. It is about lives and livelihoods and about our willingness to fight for our conviction to the point that we have to flee our birthplace to escape persecution. Being a political refugee in America also means that we are not part of an establishment with deep-rooted connections in America. So if you are looking for someone who can bring you a wealth of connections, I am not your candidate. But if you are looking for someone who is not beholden to anyone, then I am your candidate. And if you are looking for someone who can bring you a wealth of knowledge and wisdom that is hard-earned through all the ups and downs of life, then I am also your candidate. You know, the university is facing historic challenges, and they will require all of us to work together to face these challenges with honesty, integrity, courage, and determination. I have an unwavering faith that by working together, we can move forward with empathy, compassion, and action to ensure that our future is bright and filled with many possibilities. Thank you.
Okay. Michael. You're muted.
Okay, there we go. Thank you, Chair Tomasoni, Chair Bernardi, and members of the committees. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you here today. My name is Michael Hsu, and my U of M story begins with my father. My father came to the university in 1948 from China to pursue graduate studies in aerospace engineering through a Chinese government scholarship. He had survived the Japanese occupation of China in the 1930s in World War II and graduated from one of China's top universities. He chose the University of Minnesota because it had a good reputation in China. He finished his master's degree in 1949, the same year the communist government took over China. He finished his PhD in 1954, and around that time he was offered U.S. citizenship if he did not return to China. Lucky for me, he accepted. At the university, I studied electrical engineering and participated in the honors program as an Elmer L. Anderson National Merit Scholar. After college, I signed on with Arthur Anderson and later Booz Allen Hamilton. I also studied business at the University of Chicago. The University of Minnesota is one of the most important state assets we have. I believe that the university is generally moving in the right direction, but I think we can do better. As a regent and a citizen, I'm concerned about a number of things: tuition and student debt, administrative costs, transparency and accountability, access and diversity, and the student experience, including housing, mental health, and safety. The pandemic is by far the most significant issue facing the university and will impact many things such as tuition, the cost of attendance, and of course, student debt. In December, it was disclosed that we will need an $80 million plus loan. With your support, I would like to help shape the university for the post-pandemic future. It has been an honor to serve on the Board of Regents. It would be an honor to be the first person of color in over 20 years to be reelected to the board. Lastly, I'm not endorsed by any political action committees. Thank you.
Thank you. You did it under 2 minutes. That's good. Okay, Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. Good evening to all members in attendance this evening. I first wanted to take a moment and thank each member of the higher education committees who read my introductory email and extend an additional thank you to those who made time in their schedules to meet with me. I really enjoyed learning from each of you what you see as the challenges and opportunities ahead for the university, and I look forward to more discussions in the future. Second, I want to personally wish a happy National Engineers Week to all. This week was established 70 years ago by the National Society of Professional Engineers to raise public awareness of engineers' positive contributions to our quality of life. I'm a proud graduate of the Chemical Engineering Program at the University of Minnesota Duluth. I continue to cheer for the Bulldogs and encourage my daughter to cheer even louder when they play my husband's Minnesota State University Mankato Mavericks. I've maintained my connections to UMD and also the engineering community, obtaining my professional engineering license while working full-time and attending law school at night. During that time, I also advanced through the leadership of the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers, becoming its president the year I passed the bar exam. Eventually, I was sworn in as president of the National Society of Professional Engineers in 2016, traveling the country and parts of the world, meeting with many of NSPE's over 25,000 members, state and territorial societies, and cooperating engineering societies. As president, I worked closely with the officers, board of directors, and staff to increase transparency in decision-making, encourage critical questioning to get to the answer, and develop consensus through conversation. My support for the university and my desire to see it become an even stronger education institution have been my motivations to enter this process. It's important that a variety of perspectives be represented on the Board of Regents to maximize our current opportunities to reimagine education, increase world-class research programs for the betterment of the state of Minnesota, and strengthen the relationships between the university and all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have this evening.
Okay, that's two in a row in less than 2 minutes. Very good. Okay. Senator Claussen, you have a question. We'll be starting the 15-minute question and answer period with Senator Claussen's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For all three of our candidates, I'd ask, what is the one important asset you personally would bring to the Board of Regents?
Okay, we'll start out with Michael.
Thank you for the question, Senator Claussen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think what I bring to the Board of Regents is my experience. I've served for 6 years. I know the operations of the university. I've seen the operations of the university through the pandemic and have a lot of ideas about what's going to happen after the pandemic. So thank you for the question.
Woody, I should mention this is the 92nd lightning round. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni, Senator Claussen. I would bring the perspectives that I've gained in both state and national leadership positions, as well as my experiences as an engineer and a lawyer to the Board of Regents. I can't forget also that I'm a mother, I'm a working mother, and I live in Greater Minnesota. And so all of those things tied together, I would bring to the Board of Regents. I've managed larger budgets, certainly not the $4 billion budget of the University of Minnesota, but budgets in the tens of millions. I've worked with many different stakeholders on really contentious issues with the National Society and the Minnesota Societies of Professional Engineers, finding opportunities for consensus, collaboration, and also to respectfully disagree on certain items as we go along. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave? You're on mute, Dave.
Thank you. Can I start again?
Yes, you can.
Thank you. So I think what I can bring to the table is the fact that I have lived experience as well as professional experience in working in government and how to gather consensus, as well as to the ability to empathetically listen to people, all people's point of view. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for not being quite as involved. I had a testimony in another committee that I had to be at.
You're wasting time apologizing. Just ask your question.
My question is to all three candidates. Do you see yourself more on the Board of Regents as a cheerleader or a checks and balance system? Which one? And you can't say both. It has to be one or the other. What do you believe is your role?
Cody, you're first on this one.
Well, thank you, Chair Tomasoni and Senator Jasinski. I see myself as a champion, which I would classify as in more to the checks and balances, but also keeping a positive attitude. I realize you said I couldn't say both, and so I picked a new one. I really, in my prior roles and my work as an attorney and my work as an engineer, my job was to look at things critically and thoughtfully and establish what is in the best interest of the organization for which I am representing at that moment in time. I look forward to detailed discussions, possibly vigorous and spirited discussions with my fellow regents, the administration, and other stakeholders in those decision-making situations. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave?
Yes, thank you. I am also a biggest fan of the university, and because of that, I want the university to do so well. And I think in order for the university to do so well, then we need checks and balances, and I'm willing to serve in that role.
Michael.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. I think we all want to be cheerleaders, but unfortunately, we can't all be cheerleaders. We have to be there to provide oversight over the operations of the university and the administration. And I think that there are a lot of things that will come up and tough decisions that come up, and you have to be able to hold people accountable to move the organization forward.
Thank you. Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much to the candidates. If you've been viewing, my question has been same. What is your view of justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion as it pertains to the University of Minnesota? And what have you done to make a difference on those issues? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dave, your turn to go first.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni and Representative Noor. You know, this particular issue is very near and dear to my heart because being a person of color and as well as member of the LGBTQ community, racial justice or social justice is important to me, but I think in the long term, in my view, it is about changing hearts and minds. and it require all of us to have conversation with each other. But from a matter of policy, I think there are certain things that we can do in the area of education, such as increase Teachers of Colors Act, for example. There are many things that we can do, and that is just one of the examples. Thank you.
Rico. Rico.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni, and thank you for the question, Representative Knorr. On the board, in the past 6 years, I think I have been the leading voice of fairness for diversity and inclusion. I have advocated hard for the test optional admissions policy. And I'd like to say it only took a pandemic, but we do have test optional right now. It may be temporary. We don't know what's going to happen in the future, but kids can't take tests, so we can't use tests to determine admissions. And I think that being a leading voice on those issues has earned a lot of criticism about me. But I think that, that conversation has to go on, even though there are people who don't believe in it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Cody.
Thank you. During my leadership roles with the Minnesota National Societies of Professional Engineers, I worked really hard to bring diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice into our conversations. I saw the organizations grow, particularly NSPE over the years I was involved there, in their own education and in their own journey around those issues. I'm very excited to see that they've adopted now a specific diversity, equity, and inclusion strategic plan item in their most recent strategic plan, and that's a huge kudos to the current leadership of that organization. But pushing that conversation is something that's been very important to me in continuing my own educational journey as well. One of the items you had asked about is what you see as the role within the university and how I can plug into that. And I'm really looking forward to meeting with each of the campuses' diversity and inclusion offices and talking with them about what support they need in their efforts to increase diversity on our campuses, but also to really support the overall education of their students. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If he doesn't mind, I'd like to ask Representative Thompson's question from earlier today, but with less eloquently. And that's, could you talk a little bit about your approach or attitude or policies that you might consider implementing that would deal with those factors that impinge upon student success that aren't necessarily about education specifically, like things like food and affordable housing, and those issues that we mentioned earlier? Those are things that are stopping folks from succeeding. So what do you think we should do about it?
Michael, I think you're first this time.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. Thank you, Chair Tomasoni. I've been a leading advocate for housing at the university. I think one of the things that we don't do well at the university is we don't provide housing. And that's because of the university's history as a commuter campus. We've historically not provided much housing for students, certainly a lot less than our peers around in the Big Ten and also in the large state universities surrounding us. So I think that's one area, and the cost of housing has actually increased significantly over the last 10 years. And partially that has to do with the fact that we're building new dormitories and things like that. And as an auxiliary enterprise, the housing and residential life area has to pay for itself. And so they have debt service and all that kind of stuff. Additionally, food insecurity is a problem on campus. If you read my responses to the MSA questions, I discussed that in a fair amount of detail. But I think generally, once a student is on campus, we have to make sure they're successful. We have to make sure they succeed. And in order to do that, I think we have to provide other services in addition to what we're providing today. Thank you.
Thank you. Cody.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni, Chair Tomasoni, excuse me, and Senator Putnam. I think it's really important when we're thinking about issues such as those that Senator Putnam brought up, but also Representative Thompson earlier, it's important that we remember we have five campuses within the university system, and each one facing some unique challenges, but also some commonalities. and there's likely opportunities to leverage really the buying power of the university, for lack of a better term, in addressing those across the entire system. I think one of the examples Representative Thompson used earlier was the cost of books and the accessibility to technology and those types of items. It was, when I was in college, which was 20 years ago, it was challenging to get access to a computer, but for computer labs, it was expensive to have books. There were a lot of rental programs that started after that, but I think finding ways to use the size of our university to maximize those opportunities across the system is really important and is also a good check and balance, to get back to the question Senator Jasinski asked as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave?
Thank you, Senator Tomasani. So I think at the end of the day, we want our students to do well. And in order for them to do well, I think they need to be housed properly and to be fed properly. So I, as region, I would entertain all options that are on the table, including public-private partnerships in some of these areas, such as housing and food security. So again, you know, these are very tough, challenging issues that are unique to each of the campuses, like one of my fellow candidates has mentioned, and I think that we should be willing to look at all the options that are on the table. Thank you.
Thank you. So we got about 3 minutes to go. So in 1 minute, I don't see any other hands. In 1 minute, why don't you tell me why you want to be a regent? Cody, you start.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. My experiences in governance could really support the Board of Regents and the direction that it's taking. But most importantly, I'm looking forward to being part of the discussion at the university of what the future of education looks like across all of our campuses and the future of research and what we're going to do for community outreach. There are some real great lessons learned in the last year and under this pandemic that I think can really maximize what the university does for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave?
Thank you. So in a given academic year, I mentor about 4 to 5 students that are going through my clinical rotations as their elective. And I think they are the one that inspire me to apply for the position. And personally, I think I am at the station in my life where I reflect on my own life journey, and I recognize that that I own the university and the state my debt of gratitude. And I believe that by being on the Board of Regents is my best way to pay it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni, Chair Tomasoni, for this question. I think I tried to answer this in my opening statement, but basically, you know, I owe basically my life to the University of Minnesota. I would not exist today had my dad not come to this country as a student to study aerospace engineering. And if it wasn't for the timing, I probably would not have been born at all. But, you know, having received a world-class education at the university and now being able to give back for 6 years to the university, I don't think my work is finished. I think the university is facing a lot of tough challenges going forward, and I think I can continue to add value and try to keep tuition low for the students of Minnesota so that a lot of other students can benefit from the university. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all very much. I don't see any more hands or questions, so I won't suggest another 5 minutes. I declare the question and answer session closed, and now we'll move to the vote. So, Laura, take the vote of the Senate.
Chair Tomasoni.
Chair Holla.
Senator Clausen.
Chair Helen.
Senator Goggin.
Chair.
Senator Jasinski?
Shu.
Senator Putnam?
Raylan.
Sorry? Okay. Senator Rarick?
Shu.
Three votes for Shu, three votes for Verhala, and zero for Hope. Yeah. House CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi?
Verhalen.
Representative Christensen?
Verhalen.
Representative O'Neill?
Shu.
Representative Albright?
Shu.
Representative Daniels? Representative Daniels?
Shu.
Okay. Representative Erickson?
Shu.
Representative Hansen? Representative Hansen? Representative Heintzman?
Shu.
Representative Howard?
Verhalen.
Representative Keeler?
Verhalen.
Representative Cleborn?
Verhalen.
Representative Kosnick?
Shu.
Representative Kreshaw?
Shu.
Representative Mason?
Verhalen.
Representative Meckland?
Shu.
Representative Noor?
Verhalen.
Representative Sandell?
Verhalen.
Representative Sandsted?
Verhalen.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, Verhalen.
And Representative Hansen?
Verhalen, I'm sorry, I was having trouble getting unmuted. Verhalen.
Okay, I have you now. So 11 for Verhalen, 8 for Shu, 0 for Wong.
Well, members, according to our rules, Wong will have to drop out, and we will take one more round of votes. And since you went twice in a row, no, this is the first one. So take the Senate roll first. Laura, go ahead.
Chairman Thomasoni.
Verhalen.
Senator Faulkner.
Verhalen.
Senator Dwyer.
Shu.
Senator Jasinski.
Shu.
Senator Putnam.
Verhalen.
Senator Brewer.
Shu.
The total is 3-2 and 3 Verhalen.
Okay. CLA, take the vote in the House, please.
Chair Bernardi.
Verhalen.
Representative Christensen.
Verhalen.
Representative O'Neill?
Shu.
Representative Albright?
Shu.
Representative Daniels?
Shu.
Representative Erickson?
Shu.
Representative Hansen?
Verhalen.
Representative Heintzman?
Shu.
Representative Howard?
Verhalen.
Representative Keeler.
Verhalen.
Representative Cleborn.
Verhalen.
Representative Kosnick.
Shu.
Representative Kreshaw.
Shu.
Representative Mason.
Verhalen.
Representative Meckland.
Shu.
Representative Noor.
Verhalen.
Representative Sandell.
Verhalen.
Representative Sandsted.
Verhalen.
Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson? N for Verhalen. 8 for Shu.
Members, considering that the vote was the same twice in a row, and I realize that the rules say that we have to do two rounds without dropping a candidate, I'm inclined to declare an impasse after two rounds of voting, and I'll move that the remaining candidates be recommended to the joint convention as a slate. If anybody objects to that, let me know, because we can do another round of voting if you would like. But I think we probably have staked our places. And so since I don't see any objections, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails. So I will now pass the gavel back to Representative Bernard.
Thank you, Senator Tomassoni. We are now to the 7th District recommendations to consider. And before we move into candidate presentations, I will stop to ask if there are any nominations for a further recommendation in the 7th Congressional District. I do not see it. Okay, let's see here. Hold on. I lost connection here for a second. Thank you very much. I do not see any hands. We will begin by giving each candidate a chance to introduce themselves. Candidates will have up to 2 minutes for their introduction, and we will go in alphabetical order by last name. The first name will be Doug Hepsch.
Good evening. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Chair Tomassoni and committee members. I want to thank you for your time and your commitment to higher education across the whole state of Minnesota. I've spent my career in production, agriculture, small business, affordable housing, and service in small town Minnesota. I have built everything from scratch through hard work, good ideas, resilience, and continuous improvement. I've walked the walk. I have a strong resume that supports being a regent. The university drives Minnesota's global economy and our statewide workforce. This is true in my hometown of Perm. Perm is a microcosm of the larger U of M community. I served for 12 years as an Otter County Commissioner and Board Chair. I served as the chair of a USDA committee that reports to the Secretary of Agriculture. I have chaired the Statewide Community Health Services Advisory Committee. I have chaired the University of Minnesota Alumni Association. And this has given me insight into the collective opinions of 580,000 system-wide alumni living all over the world. I understand the importance of research and extension and the land-grant mission. I've represented Minnesota on trade missions around the world. I understand governance and large budgets. I'm an independent thinker. I'm assertive. I'm not a rubber stamp, but I'm also not a disagreeable person. I will represent the whole state of Minnesota. I will collaborate, I will listen, and value all sides of the discussion. I am entrepreneurial, and I bring ideas to life. The university belongs to all of us. Thank you, and I welcome your questions.
Then we will move on to Lucas Sjostrom. Welcome to the committee. And Mr. Hepsch, I forgot to welcome you to the committee. Welcome to the committee as well. Lucas Sjostrom, you may begin.
Thank you, Chairs Bernardi and Tomassoni and Joint Committee. My name is Lucas Sjostrom of Bruton. It has been a great time, had the opportunity to converse with many of you. The reason I'm here today is because I want to ensure all of Minnesota is included in the future direction of the University of Minnesota. I want to better engage all of agriculture, both ends of the scale with University of Minnesota, and because I want to engage all of greater Minnesota, which means long gravel driveways like mine and larger towns with the University of Minnesota. Today, I am a co-owner with my family in our dairy farm and artisan cheese plant. Full-time, I work for Minnesota's dairy farmers in research and promotion, as well as relations with the University of Minnesota, the agriculture industry at large, and our friends in the legislature and regulatory work. We started our cheese plant with a Kickstarter campaign. When the pandemic hit and we had no orders last year, we started a cheese delivery business. I realize a land-grant university will likely never quite be as nimble, but I do know how to match customer, or in this case, student needs, in quick fashion to demand. I have the pleasure of serving on formal or informal advisory committees for all three agricultural colleges, CFANS, the School of Vet Med, and Extension, as well as the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. I attend AGREET, which is through the legislature, as well as the Rapid Ag Response Fund, which is through the legislature committees, and also serve on the Policy Fellows Alumni Committee. I graduated with my bachelor's degree in 2009, served as commencement speaker, began my career, returned in 2013 for my master's degree.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Scholstem. Appreciate that. We will now move on to Michael Yost.
Good evening, chairpersons and members of the Joint Committee. I appreciate this opportunity to discuss my desire to become a member of the Board of Regents. I have a passion for the university, its heritage, traditions, and what it's done for the people of Minnesota. I'm proud to be a fourth-generation farmer, but my experience goes beyond production agriculture. I've worked for a Fortune 500 company, served on several boards, from chairing the local school board to being president of the American Soybean Association. I've led two federal agencies at USDA, one with offices in nearly every county in the United States, another that spanned the globe with programs in over 90 countries. I've been responsible for billion-dollar administrative budgets and multi-billion-dollar programs. We have an obligation to make the University of Minnesota an exceptional land-grant college, one that provides quality education for our students by positioning them for success, one that does world-class research that attracts both grant money and brilliant scientists, and one that provides outreach to the citizens of Minnesota as they look for guidance on issues that affect their everyday lives. I'm running for the Board of Regents to represent the 7th District. My roots are in western Minnesota. My family has farmed here for 145 years. I've been to every county in the 7th District, most of them multiple times. I know the people, their concerns, their issues, their hopes. I'm also familiar with the world, traveling to over 40 countries with experiences ranging from discussing biotechnology with members of the House of Lords and the British Parliament, to distributing meals of corn-soy blend at a McGovern Dole Food for Education project in Nairobi, Kenya. My background and life experiences will bring a global perspective along with a deep understanding of Greater Minnesota to the border regions. My goals as a regent are straightforward. I want a university that's accountable and transparent, and one that has a culture of inclusivity, creativity, adaptability, and a passion to be the best. Thank you.
Madam Chair, you're muted.
Yep. Okay. I've got my technical expert here again. Thank you, Representative.
You again went to mute, Madam Chair.
Okay. I did not touch anything. So thank you. You are the best. So obviously, I did something wrong there. Members, we have come. We will move into our 15-minute question and answer portion. Please raise your hand on Zoom if you would like to ask a question, and we will give each candidate 90 seconds to answer their question. Representative Clausen. Representative Clausen, you're on mute. Representative Clausen, your mute is on. We cannot hear you.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Join the club.
Actually, my computer screen went blank there for a moment. So question that I asked earlier, what is the one important asset you personally would bring to the Board of Regents?
And we will start this time with Lucas Scholstrom. Go ahead, Mr. Scholstrom.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Senator Clausen. I've had the opportunity to travel regularly throughout the state of Minnesota, travel throughout the U.S., and I think the diversity, obviously all three of us from the 7th District represent agriculture pretty boldly in different ways. I've been able to see both on the consumer side how needs change and how quickly they change, and also on the producer side, working with large-scale agriculture in my day job. So I think that diversity of thought, of truly seeing both ends of the spectrum, in addition to knowing, you know, my blind spots in the greater set of Minnesota, and really been focusing on that the past few years, thinking about diversity and equity throughout the state.
And then we will move on to Mr. Yost. Mr. Yost.
Thank you for that question. I guess, first of all, I bring my core values, integrity, strong work ethic, and adaptability, ability to adapt to change. I also bring a wealth of experience dealing with large institutions, large budgets, and in some cases, a difficult set of and groups of people to deal with. I think that's what I bring.
And then we will move on to Mr. Hebsch.
Chair Bernardi, thank you for the question. That's a really good question, Senator Klassen. I think the thing that I would bring to the board more than anything is my entrepreneurship. I'm an entrepreneur in everything I do. I look at everything I've done. I've started from scratch, from the ground up. Even though I'm a fifth generation farmer, I started my farm from scratch because I haven't been in that line of the family that inherited the family farm. But everything I do, I did from scratch. And then I use checks and balances and controls to try to improve all areas in whatever I'm working in, whether it's in Otter Tail County or with the University of Minnesota Alumni Association. I look at the metrics and try to move the organization that way. Thank you for your question.
And then our next question, we will have the person ask, will be from Sandra, Representative Mason. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Recently, I've heard from several, more than a few people, that it seems like there are many people that are not being accepted at the university. And even if this is not, we don't have the data to prove that, the fact that it's out there bothers me considerably. So how would you go about resolving that issue?
Begin our question for the answer with Mr. Yost.
Well, thank you for that question. I would like to explore the test optional admittance.
Okay. Completed his question, the answer, then I will move on to Mr. Hebsch.
Senator Bernardi, Representative, thank you for the question. We have five campuses, and they all have unique circumstances. And so what we need to do is we need to have a seamless approach to admitting students throughout all five campuses, and so they can transfer and not lose credits. Out here in rural Minnesota, we have Crookston and Morris, and a lot of kids from our area go to those schools. But when they want to transfer into the big U to the cities for a graduate program, they need to have seamless credits. So we need to work on that. Thank you.
And then we will move on to Mr. Shostrom.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Representative Mason. Yeah, I really appreciate the question because I have a cousin and know several others in the area who, at least told to me, have ACT scores near or above 30, great grades, involved in everything, and don't get in. And I've also heard that outside of this area. I've heard of it now in the Twin Cities as well. So we've got two things in terms of customer service. We've got expectations. So we're not, I don't think, setting good expectations. And when those rumors get out, you really ruin your reputation. And the other thing is, just allowing transferability, allowing us to set expectations of what gets you in. Those stats are out there, but the stories I've heard just don't line up. So I hope I can, if I'm exploring them, I find out they're one-offs and not normal, but I've heard them several times, and I'd like to dig in.
Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, just wanted to repeat the same question that I've been asking folks. I wanted to know, what is your view when it comes to the University of Minnesota, or what will you do to ensure there's justice, there's equity, there's diversity and inclusion to ensure that all students, not only students from the metro area, but from greater Minnesota, including the urban core, to ensure that students, especially BIPOC students, are valued and welcomed and included in what you will be doing as a core value for the state of Minnesota.
We will begin that question with Mr. Hebsch.
Chair Bernardi, Representative, thank you for that good question. And we have kind of the advantage of hearing that question before, so I wish I had a better answer for you. I can tell you that my son-in-law is a person of color. He's from India, and he had some similar problems of getting included into the University of Minnesota system. But he did but he always talks about different things that we can do. So I just want to listen to everybody. I think that we have to understand that everybody comes from a different past, and we all have barriers, and we need to remove those barriers. But beyond that, once we accept people into the program, we have to hold their hands along the way. So we need more counseling. We need more, we just need more help for people, especially like in the third year when the dropout rates become higher. So thanks a lot.
We will move on to Mr. Shostrom.
Yes, thank you, Chair Bernardi, and Mr. Representative Knorr. In terms of BIPOC, all of us, I think, have mentioned we work with members of the Hispanic community on a regular basis, but I've, as I've said before, tried to work on embedding myself in other communities. The Humphrey Policies Fellowship allowed me to do that, meet great people from throughout Minnesota, and you know, in those roles, just a couple weeks ago, University or CFANS had a diversity and inclusion focus group. And in a lot of those situations, I've learned I just need to listen. I didn't grow up the same way, and neither did they as me. Finally, this summer, a very small thing, we all would love to do more financially and with our time, but we were able to donate the 100% of the proceeds of one cheese vat to an organization called P's and Q's in Moorhead. They support diverse kids, diverse populations of kids growing up, and it's somebody we know. And so we're getting more involved. We want to do more. When I say we, I mean my wife and I, but it's a never-ending journey, of course.
Mr. Yost.
I think the first thing I would do is just reach out to current students, find out what their trials and tribulations and their concerns are. Then I would go into the communities and say, okay, how come you're not coming to the university? Is it financial? I think we can fix that. Is it you can't qualify for admittance? Perhaps, as I said earlier, test optional. Then I think also once the students get there, if they're, you know, we've got to make sure there's programs there that they want to major in, they want to take, and we have to measure them and set them up for success. You always want to set students up for success, and that's going to take some extra effort.
We now will move on to a question from Representative Albright. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for all three of the candidates. You know, the state of Minnesota has been blessed with an abundance of natural resources. Coming from Blue Earth County, they don't call it Blue Earth for nothing because of the richness of the soil. And so we have a great heritage in terms of crops, of livestock, but we also have we've been blessed with natural resources in the ground as well, whether that be through iron ore, through copper and nickel. And the University of Minnesota has a responsibility to develop those and to support those initiatives. And I'd like to hear from each one of the candidates in terms of how you would promote each one of those natural resources, particularly how you would commercialize and help those efforts to commercialize new and innovative technologies in each one of those areas.
We will begin the question with the answer from Mr. Shostrom.
Yes, thank you, Chair Bernardi, Representative Albright. So if I understand the question, just how to focus on those areas. And the simple overarching answer, I'll get in a little bit as time allows, but agriculture and manufacturing above that. But agriculture is our number two industry in the state. If you include forestry in that, I mean, that's humongous. If you include mining in that, it's where a lot of our things come from. When you look at our Fortune 500 companies, you just look at the names and you realize they are here because of those raw materials. And so because a lot of them operate in commodities, I think we need to focus on research as our land grant institution and ensure that through the legislature and through other means, we are supporting as much research as fiscally possible at the University of Minnesota, being responsible with that and seeing the returns, because a lot of those returns don't pay off for 10, 15, or 20 years. There may be 25 or 30-year projects. On the other side of things, I think, is the niche businesses. They can also really upstart and support agriculture, support mining. Maybe we can sell blue earth in a bottle. I'm not sure. But there's ways to add value by telling stories. That's what I've been able to do with my wife. And I think we need to support both types of businesses and the in-between.
And now we'll move on to Mr. Hepsch.
Chair Bernardi, and thank you for this question. I think this is a really important question. I come from a county that has more than 1,000 lakes, and we're really big into agriculture as well. And so what we've done is we've had the two have to mix. We have to use the resources that God gave us to make our state better. And we can do it environmentally through programs like the NRRI and different things that that they do. In Otter County here, we value add food. We have dog food and pet food and cheese and whatever else that we value add. And we do it environmentally. And we have, over, like I said, over 1,000 lakes. And we monitor the water quality in all those lakes. And it's improving in every lake, because we can monitor it and we can find the points of pollution and fix them. So I think we have to have both. And if we're going to have an economy to meet the world's needs, we're going to have to do both. Thank you.
Okay. I see we got through all of our questions. We have about a couple more minutes here. So I'm going to give each of you 30 to 45 seconds to let us know.
Madam Chair, I don't know that Mr. Yost answered my question.
Oh, I am sorry. I did not call on you, Mr. Yost.
No, that's fine, Representative Bernardi. I can sum up my answer in one word: sustainability. Whether it's agriculture, forestry, or mining, it has to be sustainable. It's that provides value to everyone in the state of Minnesota, everyone in the world, if we do things sustainable. I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Representative Albright, for pointing that out. We got through all of the questions, and I will now bring the 15-minute question and answer period to a close, and we will move on to the vote. The House clerk will take the roll of the House, then the Senate clerk will take the roll in the Senate. You may proceed, Ms. Schmaus.
Chair Bernardi.
Hepsch.
Representative Christensen.
Hepsch.
Representative O'Neill.
Yost.
Representative Albright.
Yost.
Representative Daniels.
Yost.
Representative Erickson.
Yost.
Representative Hansen.
Hoops.
Representative Heinzman. Representative Heinzman.
Yost.
Okay, Yost. Representative Howard.
Hepsch.
Representative Keeler.
Hepsch.
Representative Cleburne.
Hepsch.
Representative Kosnick.
Yost.
Representative Kresha.
Yost.
Representative Mason.
Hupes, H-U-E-E, that didn't come out right. Do you have it?
I have it, yep, perhaps.
Okay.
Representative Meckland.
Yost.
Representative Knorr.
Habs.
Representative Sandell.
Heps.
Representative Sandsted.
Heps.
Representative Thompson.
Heps.
11 for Heps. 8 for Yost. And 0 for Sjostrom.
Okay, and now we will move on to have the Senate clerk begin the roll in the Senate, or the vote, excuse me.
Chair Tomasoni.
Yep.
Senator Claussen.
Yep.
Senator Geyer.
Yost.
Senator Jasinski.
Yost.
Senator Putnam.
Yep.
Senator Barrett.
Yost.
Okay, what I heard that was, it was faint. Senator Tomasoni, would you like to repeat that, please?
The vote was 3 for Heps, 0 for Sjostrom, and 3 for Yost.
Thank you. And in the House, it was 11 for Heps, 8 for Yost, and 0 for Sjostrom. We will, the candidate, Sjostrom has the fewest votes and they will be dropped. The clerk will now take the vote, will now take the roll for the second round of voting, and the candidates that remain are Yost and Hepsch. Ms. Schmoes.
Chair Bernardi.
Hepsch.
Representative Christensen.
Hepsch.
Representative O'Neill.
Yost.
Representative Albright.
Yost.
Representative Daniels. Representative Daniels.
Yost.
Okay, got it. Representative Erickson.
Yost.
Representative Hansen.
Hansen, Hepsch.
Representative Heintzman.
Yost.
Representative Howard.
Hepsch.
Representative Keeler.
Hepsch.
Representative Cleborne.
Hepsch.
Representative Kosnick.
Yost.
Representative Kreisha.
Yost.
Representative Mason.
Hepsch.
Representative Meckland.
Yost.
Representative Knorr.
Hepsch.
Representative Sandell.
Hepsch.
Representative Sandsted.
Hepsch.
Representative Thompson.
Hepsch.
11 for Hepsch and 8 for Yost.
Okay, now we will move to the Senate.
Chairman Tomasoni.
Yost.
Senator Claussen.
Hepsch.
Senator Geyer.
Yost.
Senator Jasinski.
Yost.
Senator Putnam.
Hepsch.
Senator Rarick.
Yost.
Votes in
Hepsch,
2, Yost, 4.
And Senator Tomasoni, would you like to repeat that, or would you like me to do it?
Go ahead.
Okay, so we have, what I hear, it's very faint, but I heard 2 for Hepsch and 4 for Yost.
That's correct.
And in the House, we have 11 for Hepsch and 8 for Yost. And now that we've been through two rounds and people have I just want to confirm this, Senator Tomasoni. Did we have a change from the first round of voting?
We did, but I don't think it changed anything, Madam Chair.
Okay, but. So I will do, Representative Tomasoni had asked last time, if there are no objections, that we skip our third round of votings as we move through these votes and declare an impasse and move the slate. Objections. I'll look on my screen to see, and I will scan our. Since there are no objections to do that and skip our third vote as in our different rounds here, I will, having reached an impasse after two rounds, I will move that the remaining candidates be recommended to the joint convention as a slate. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The slate, it passes, and the candidates of Mr. Hepsch and Mr. Yost will move forward to the joint convention. Well, I want to thank all of our members, the staff, and all those tuning in tonight, and our candidates for being here, running a very efficient and effective meeting. Thank you for your time and your commitment. And the Representative Tomasoni, if it's okay with you, I just want to confirm with you, I am going to be adjourning the meeting, and I just want to make sure that's a thumbs up.
Let me echo my thanks to Senator
Tomasoni.
Senator Bernardi. Thank you all very much. And I want to compliment the staff, and I want to compliment the RCAC for all the hard work, and then all the legislators that worked with them, because I know you went through hours and hours. And I also want to thank all the candidates who are here and for your answers and for being dedicated to the University of Minnesota. So thank you all very much. And back to you, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you. And thank you again to all the candidates. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.